This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Pride and Prejudice, The Great Gatsby, A Tale of Two Cities, and Jane Eyre are just a few of the great classic novels of all time. What makes a great story? Well, regardless of the type of story you prefer, one thing draws you into a story more than anything else: conflict. In the story of Jonah, there is a lot of conflict. Today, Pastor Sam will begin a sermon titled, Prophet Overboard. It's from Jonah chapter 1, verses 7 through 16. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
Let me have you turn in your Bible this morning to the book of Jonah. We are continuing our journey with Jonah for these four brief chapters. I was thinking as I was trying to think of how to work this sermon out in my own life about the power of a good story. Stories are very powerful vehicles. They are compelling ways in which important life-shaping truths are often communicated to us. They bring truth near. They help us to grab it by grabbing us. They make truth very vivid. Stories have a way of bringing truth up close and personal. They make it memorable. What we learn from a story makes a lasting impact on our thinking. They make truth portable, and they make truth permanent. They help us to grasp concepts because we see them lived out in a compelling way. Now, let me give you some examples of this. How many of you have heard the little line, tale as old as time, song as old as rhyme? How many of you have heard that? Do you have a particular story that you connect that with? Beauty and the Beast. And by the way, there's a beautiful Beauty and the Beast performance coming up not too far from us, which is why I thought of that. Tale as old as time, song as old as rhyme. And when you think about Beauty and the Beast, here's a lesson that you learn. Don't judge a book by its cover, right? How about Cinderella? If the shoe fits, what? Wear it. How about Aladdin and the Magic Lamp? Be careful what you wish for, right? Snow White, what about Snow White? Appearances are deceiving. Things are not always what they seem. There is more here than meets the eye. You see what I'm saying? These are stories that you grew up hearing. They happen to be fairy tales. Sometimes they're legends. Sometimes they have a moral to them. But all of these powerful stories that have been part of our life communicate very powerful truths. And all we have to do is remember the story, and we can make our way back to the truth. But what if the story is true? You know something about true stories? True stories have true power to communicate truth in a true way. True stories have true power to communicate truth in a true way. And what we're reading today, and what we've been doing now for a number of weeks, is we have been listening to a true story. And if we will let the truth that true story is communicating impact our life, it will have a deep and very powerful impact. And so this morning, as we jump into the story, let me set it up for you. We are jumping into the second scene of a story. The book of Jonah actually unfolds like you would see a story unfold. And each part of the story has important lessons that it teaches. And so in the first act, or in the first part of the story, we met Jonah. And we began to see what was really going on early on in the story. Jonah was a prophet. He was a servant of the Lord who for many years had ministered faithfully in the work God had called him to do. He had been serving the Lord in a hard place and in a dark space. We spent some time in the book of James, and James talked about what it's like to have to serve God in a hard place and in a dark space. And Jonah has been doing that for many years. He has been serving God in the northern kingdom, where God's people have been busy and they have been hard at work sinning away. They have embraced idolatry. They have participated in immorality, and they are celebrating injustice in their midst. And Jonah has been praying for them, and Jonah has been preaching to them, and he has been warning them about God's impending judgment. God sees what you're doing. God knows what you're up to, and God has said some things about that behavior. And then as he preaches to them, he walks away, and like Elijah and Elisha before him, he prayed fervently to God that God would work in their heart, and that instead of mercy, God would give to them, or instead of wrath, God would give to them mercy. And God answered that prayer, didn't he? And he said to Jonah, Jonah, I have looked down and I have seen my people that I love, and I see everything they're doing. I see all of their immorality. I see all of the injustice, and I see all of the idolatry, but I see also all of the anguish. I see all of the trouble they're in, and there is no one to deliver. And so, Jonah, I want you to go to that wicked king Jeroboam, and I want you to tell him that I'm about to send him mercy. And Jonah was good with that. But then God decided to send mercy to someone else. And he says to Jonah, Jonah, I want you to pack your bags. You're going on a mission trip for me. And I'm sending you about 500 miles from here. And I want you to go and tell the Assyrians that their wickedness has come up before me. Just like the idolatry and the immorality and the injustice of my people was something that I saw, here are people who are pagan idolaters, and they're wholly given over to idolatry and immorality and injustice, and that has come up before me, and I want you to go there, and I want you to preach to them. And Jonah said, no way, no how, I'm not doing it. And you remember the story, because we've spent a couple of weeks in that first part of the story. Jonah gets up, and he goes down to Joppa, and then he goes down into a boat, and then he heads out to the Timbuktu of his day, to the port of Tarshish. And in this first scene, Jonah has been fleeing from the Lord. He decides, I'm done with this prophet ministry as much as I've loved it. I'm done with this special place on the planet where God's presence is as much as I've loved it. I'm done with all of this because what God is about to do is completely unacceptable to me. And so he flees from the Lord. But the Lord was not allowed, about to let Jonah get away without a fight. And so like a mighty warrior, he gathers the wind in his hands and he hurls it like an unseen javelin, and it lands on the ocean, and pretty soon an amazing storm comes up. And that storm is in the very path of the ship where Jonah has laid down to sleep, ignorant of the will of God, ignorant of the needs of those around him, and ignorant or willfully ignorant of his own desperate state. So with that scene in mind, the curtain rises now, and we come to scene number two. And scene number two has four parts to it, and each part has an important part to play in this particular part of the story. And so as you open up the curtain and you see a snoring prophet below deck and pandemonium above deck, the very first thing that God wants you to notice in the story is, you could call this part of the scene fearful desperation. There is fearful desperation on account of something that God has wrought. God has acted in a certain way, and because of the way that God has acted, it has created fearful desperation in the heart of people. And you can see that in verses 5 and 6. You see the fear of the desperate sailors. These men were seasoned sailors. They were well acquainted with the sea. They were experienced in the art of navigation. In other words, when you got on a ship the size of this one that was about to take a journey some 2,000 miles away from where Jonah was to the port of Tarshish, you didn't go with weekend sailors. These were professional sailors who knew the sea, they knew the art of sailing, and were well experienced with everything they could potentially encounter on a journey. And there's no evidence in this text that they thought for a moment that the journey was ill-advised or ill-timed. There's nothing in the text like you find in Acts 27. You remember in Acts 27, the Apostle Paul is about to get on a ship, and the ship is about to take him to Rome, and he looks at the captain of the ship, and he said, this is a very, very bad time to sail. This is the wrong season to take an ocean journey. This is after the fast. And everybody knows that after the fast, there are winds that come up, the currents change. And so this is a very bad time for this ship to be going on a journey. There's nothing like that in this text. And as they take their journey, the storm comes out of nowhere. The storm is fierce and it is ferocious. And it is so bad that the ship isn't just about to sink. The ship is actually threatening to break apart, to break in half. And these seasoned sailors were absolutely terrified. By the way, in verse 5, this is the first of three references in this story where you read about the sailors being afraid. And what you're going to follow as the scene unfolds is the fear of the sailors leads them in a healthy direction. And Jonah, who in verse 1 is afraid, and you find out in chapter 4 why he's afraid, that fear takes him in a very bad direction. And that's the way it is with us. Sometimes God uses fear, the right kind of fear, to drive us to God, but sometimes we can let something we're afraid that God is about to do absolutely drive us away from God. And we're going to see that play out in the story. So, here they are. Each man begins to pray to their individual God for help and for salvation. Every one of those sailors had a personal God. They may have been from different countries. Every country had a regional idol. And so they began to cry out to their idols. This is no perfunctory praying like you would pray at the beginning of a journey. This is no little sort of ritual that you sort of do to make sure everybody's happy and the gods are all good as you go. This is desperate praying. This is passionate praying. This is fervent praying because they are convinced that without external supernatural help, they are going to meet certain death. The situation is so dire, death is so imminent, that they do a desperate thing. They have been entrusted with valuable cargo. And in the ancient world, if you took the cargo on, you were responsible for that cargo until it got delivered. And you were financially liable for any loss. And here are these men, and they are so desperate for their lives that they begin to hurl this cargo over the ship. By the way, God has already hurled something in the book. He hurled a great wind. And now the sailors are hurling precious cargo over the side. Pandemonium reigns on the deck. And as we're watching all of this noise and we're seeing all of this desperate activity, the camera sort of pans back and out of the corner of your eye, you kind of turn and you're just in time to see somebody disappear down below deck. And it's Jonah. And while pandemonium is raining on top, he goes down as he sees all of this fervent praying and desperate activity. Instead of calling out to the true God of heaven, and instead of lifting his finger to help, he goes down below deck and he goes down into his bed for one final sleep before he meets his fate along with these pagan sailors. How different than the Apostle Paul in Acts 27. Who, when he found himself on a ship that really did break up in the midst of a storm that really did destroy the boat, he stood in the midst of everybody on that ship and he said this, I urge you to take heart. Paul said, I want you to take heart. There will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night has stood before me an angel of God to whom I belong and who I worship. And he said, do not be afraid. Verse 25, so take heart, men, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as God has told me. Jonah could have done this. Jonah could have stood in front of all these men and he could have said, I know the God who caused all of this. I can pray to him. I can lift my voice. But instead of doing that, and instead of lifting his hand and opening his mouth to encourage the heart of these pagan sailors, like Paul did centuries later, instead he goes down, and then he goes down to bed, and then he goes down to sleep. Jonah's sinful disobedience made him deaf to God and blind to the desperate needs around him. And by the way, that's what disobedience does to us. Doesn't it? When we pull a Jonah, doesn't it make us deaf to God? I mean, we hear him, but we don't hear him. Doesn't it make us blind? We see what's going around us, but we don't see. And as we kind of close out this little part of the scene, basically what we discover is that while Jonah may be deaf and blind, God is not deaf and he is not blind. And that's the next thing that happens as we move through the scene. The next little piece is all about what God does. There is sovereign revelation that is about to happen. You can see this in verses 7 through 9. The suddenness of the storm and its ferocity made the sailors so afraid, and they had never really encountered anything like this, and so they concluded rightly that this storm did not come about as a natural storm. That there were supernatural origins for the storm. And when their desperate praying and their desperate activity could not avail the help of the gods or prevail over the storms, they decided to seek out the cause for the tempest that had come against them. It must really have been a truly desperate situation for them. While the waves are crashing over and the ship's about to split apart, for them to stop everything and say to one another, we have got to appeal to the gods to find out who's behind this. And so these seaworthy sailors, knowing that this storm had come upon them on account of some great evil or offense committed by somebody on board the vessel, decided to appeal to providence to find out the cause. And so there is providential revelation. They said, come, let us cast lots. Now, in Jonah's day, the pagan nations had a ton of ways that they could use to find out things from the gods. If they were curious to know what the gods were thinking, there were all kinds of ways available to them. For example, they could look at nature and they could assign meaning to certain things that were unusual in nature, like unusual animal behavior. Oh, that's a sign from the gods. Or maybe the color of the sky would be unusual. Oh, that's an omen. That's a sign from the gods. Or one of the most powerful ones would be an eclipse. Oh, wait a second. God, there's something big up with the gods. There's an eclipse. Maybe they would offer a sacrifice to their gods. And they would cut open the sacrifice and they would examine one of the organs. Maybe it would be the liver or the kidney or the entrails. And they would look at the condition of these and they would say, good or bad omen from the Lord. In a particularly desperate scenario, they might choose one of their best warriors or one of their most beautiful maidens and adorn them in all of their finery and load them down with gifts and send them to the gods so they could deliver the appeal personally to the gods. And all of these ways were prohibited by the true God for his people Israel. But God had given his people a way before the Bible had been fully given. Before the Holy Spirit had completed revelation, God had given his people a way, and he had promised to engage in this way for them if they would use it. And it was called the casting of the lots. And you can read about this in Proverbs 16, verse 33, where God said, the lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. It's interesting, isn't it, that of all the ways that these pagan sailors could have picked to find out what was going on, they picked the one way that God said his people could use I mean, if I'm Jonah, I'm like, oh, of all the things you could have picked, you had to pick the lots. Because he knew the moment the lots came out, he knew where they were going, right? It's not like Jonah was thinking, oh, I wonder where this is going. As soon as he saw the lots, he knew the game was up, right? He knew this. He knew his number was up. And sure enough, the lots were cast, and they came out on him. And now the soldiers begin this investigation. And you know how they begin an investigation? They don't start with accusations. They start with questions. Somebody once said, accusations tend to harden our will, but questions stir our conscience. And so these soldiers, or these sailors rather, begin to ask Jonah four questions. What is your occupation? Who are you? Where do you come from? What is your country? And who are your people? And for the first time, Jonah opens his mouth and speaks in the book. And there is his reluctant identification. Jonah confesses his identity. I am a Hebrew. And you're like, okay, whatever. But the sailors stood up and paid notice. Because everybody in Jonah's day knew what a Hebrew was. Everybody knew about these people. These were the people whose God drowned Pharaoh's army in the Red Sea. These were the people whose God tumbled down the walls of the largest armed city in the land where they went in, a city called Jericho. These were the people whose King David was granted victory over all of his enemies. These were the people whose King Solomon was so famous and he built this magnificent temple. Everybody in Jonah's day knew who the Hebrew people were. And then they knew what a Hebrew prophet was. Jonah said, I confess that I fear the Lord. I am a Hebrew and I fear the Lord. Now, what does it mean for Jonah to fear the Lord? Well, in this context, it means this. Jonah says, I am a Hebrew and I serve Yahweh. I am a servant. I worship, I fear. The word can also mean serve. I serve Yahweh. I am his official servant. Now, everybody in Jonah's day knew who the Hebrews were, but they also knew a lot about the Hebrew God, Yahweh. We call him the Lord. Everybody knew that he was the most powerful God in the cosmos. Everybody had heard what happened to Dagon, the Philistine God, when he tried to stand in front of this God. They knew the story of how he had fallen down in front of this God. They knew the story of the gods of the Hittites and the Canaanites who were powerless to stop the people when this God was fighting for them. Ask Baal what happened to his 850 prophets and priests in the days of Elijah and Elisha. These sailors were like, of all the things that could have, this is the most fortuitous thing. Of all the people that could have landed on our boat, we just happened to land the best kind of a person. We happened to land a servant of the God who's causing all of this. Jonah had told them, I serve the Lord, the God who made the dry land and the sea. Those were the two places they were most interested in at the moment.
Thanks, Pastor Sam. We'll conclude this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for teaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Join us for our worship service at 9:30 every Sunday morning, or connect with us online at pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is produced by the audio team at Palmetto Baptist Church, also by Ryan Ahrens and CJ Billieux. Join us again next time, so together we can grow in grace.